This edition of Section D was first broadcast on the 9th of September 2014 on Monocle 24. Section D is brought to you in association with Grundig.
Hello and welcome to Section D, the hour we devote to the world of design each week here on Monocle 24. Today it's going to be me, David Pleasant, bringing you the show from Paris, where the product, furniture and homeware designers of the world gather for the Maison et Objet trade fair. Coming up today, we'll meet some of the designers, executives and followers that make the design industry what it is. I'll be speaking to a city mayor from Florida that has come all the way to Paris to see firsthand how to host an international design trade fair.
I wanted to come to be here to see it firsthand before it comes to Miami Beach, meet a lot of the various vendors, and understand, even to a greater level, how great this show is going to be for Miami Beach.
Then, a British design retailer that also commissions his own new lines. I'll be getting the first look at the finished products.
Having just taken over this upholstery factory, it was a kind of perfect way of bringing in some colour and some change and some softness to what we do, which is what we kind of needed and what the design business was going through.
Plus, I catch up with one very high profile designer who picked up the best award in town and seems to be taking it all in his stride.
People tend to do is a retrospective of their work, but honestly, I'm much more interested in the next thing rather than what happened last few years. In fact, I don't really like the things that I made in the last few years, so I'm intent on making the next thing.
That's all here on Section D with me, David Pleasant, in Paris on Monocle 24. To kick off our tour de Maison et Objet here on Section D, let's start with the fundamentals of creating and developing a brand. The notions of best representing and encouraging growth apply to any company, from the one-man shop design studio to the big corporates, and, not least, to those important trade fairs that keep the wheels of design innovation turning. Maison et Objet has grown year after year to occupy a unique position in the busy calendars of design professionals and retailers alike. From bespoke bed frames from Barcelona to trademark taxidermy from Belgium, the range of products on view here in Paris is truly bewildering. Also key to Maison et Objet's appeal is the gathering of luxury and tailor-made market aficionados. The community that is created at Maison is one of the show's key assets. This brand power is something that also allows Paris to flex its industry might and maintain its global reputation. It's little wonder, therefore, that other cities might fight over the opportunities to host such a big event. This year saw Maison et Objet set up shop in Singapore to tap in on some of those vast Asian markets. Hot off the wheels of that success, next year Maison will go west, and to reach all corners of North and South America, one city is ideally placed. Miami Beach is gaining the reputation as an art and cultural industry destination par excellence. The Art Miami Basel Trade Fair has shown that this Floridan city can adopt and develop a very Eurocentric brand and make it its own. To find out a little more, I spoke to the two most important men in this venture, Philippe Brocard, the director of Maison et Objet, and Philippe Levine, the mayor of Miami Beach, who is in Paris to see what he should expect in May 2015.
I'm so happy to be here. It's such a spectacular show. I'm overwhelmed by the quality and how well put together this entire show is. As you know, Miami Beach is a very unique place. I mean, there's only one Miami Beach in the entire world. And, you know, Miami Beach is a place that's become a center for creative collaboration. We have some of the most unique people in the world moving there, visiting Miami Beach. And the shows that we've been able to attract are quite specific and allow people to really see the greatest things that the world has to offer. And, of course, as you know, we've had Art Basel for a while in Miami Beach. And the opportunity that we have next year to have Maison et Objet come to Miami Beach is quite amazing. And I wanted to come to be here to see it firsthand before it comes to Miami Beach, meet a lot of the various vendors, and understand, even to a greater level, how great this show is going to be for Miami Beach.
In terms of business and the economics of it, how has Art Miami Basel affected the city?
interesting phrase we use in Miami Beach. It's called getting sand in your shoes. So you can imagine, we have the most amazing people from all over the world, whether they're in hedge fund, private equity, industries, arts, creative. They're moving to Miami Beach. They're coming for quality of the lifestyle that Miami Beach offers, as well as, of course, the tax savings the state of Florida does. Art Basel has brought the most unique, interesting people that have visited Miami Beach. They come to Miami Beach. They love it so much. They get what we call getting sand in their shoes, and they end up moving to Miami Beach. They live there part-time most of the time in the year. So bringing these type of shows have not only attracted interesting people to Miami Beach, but the offshoots in industry have been tremendous. People opening up galleries, starting companies, deciding they'd like to invest in Miami Beach, and it's happening over and over again. And these type of shows really mirror who Miami Beach is and who we're becoming even in the future.
And as a mayor, how do you facilitate something like this happening?
Well, it's more of a creative collaboration, truthfully. And I think that, like any city, you need to make sure that you offer the right environment for shows like Maison to come. A show like Maison Objet can go anywhere in the world. Every city in the world would like to have them. And we're so honored to have them. So we believe that we create the right environment, the right approach, and have the right playing field, that they feel comfortable, that this is right for them. And I think we've achieved that through a collaboration with Philippe.
And now, Philippe, please could you introduce yourself and perhaps tell us your role here?
I'm Philippe Roquer. I'm the director of Maison Objet in Paris, now in Singapore and Miami Beach. 2-3 years ago, we were thinking about expanding the brand outside Paris. So we started with Singapore for the Asia-Pacific region. And we were looking for a location in the US, but a location that could attract buyers, interior designers from US, but also from South America. South America is very important in this project. And then we meet a lot of cities, New York, LA, and at the end, we finally look at Miami Beach. First, because we consider that this is the only city where you can really attract buyers from North and South America. There is a huge population of residents coming from Brazil or Mexico or Chile or Argentina in Miami Beach. It's a very convenient city. You mean when you arrive at the airport, 15 minutes after, you are at the convention center. And this is very important for us because we don't want our buyers spending that time in the traffic. It could be the case in some big cities, even in the US. And then we find people in Miami Beach were really close to us. And the first meeting we had with Philippe was just fantastic because he's the mayor, but he's an entrepreneur. So he can understand our needs and they put everything on the table to help us. So this is not only a show organized by a company, but it is a show organized by a community. So that was very important for us.
What a wonderful depiction of a city, glowing review. That must make you very happy, Philip.
Absolutely. We think it's only the beginning. So we hope to continue. And of course, as Philippe said, the geographic location of Miami Beach is so unique. And whether you're from Argentina or either from Brazil or New York or LA or Europe, Miami Beach is so accessible to the world and everybody wants to come.
How do you go about creating an identity for a new location?
We tried to replicate the concept. The concept is, this is not a furniture show, it's not a tableware show, it's everything for the home on a very high-end positioning. For example, in Singapore, we had 30% of our exhibitors, they were from Asia, and they never exhibited in Paris. So what we tried to achieve in Miami Beach, we tried to have a good balance of European companies, US companies, but we are also very excited to welcome designers from Mexico, from Brazil, from Chile, from Argentina. So the concept is the same, but we try to adapt so that even European buyers, when they come to Miami or when they come to Singapore, they can find new exhibitors, new people to make business.
If you had an advice for other mayors in other cities, how do you get to the position, this glowing review, this sunny, wonderful depiction of a city? Any advice to other budding mayors?
Move to Miami Beach. I think we're very lucky to start with a city that has incredible assets attributed to it. And we have a population of people that are very unique, very creative, very interested. The one thing is we have 90,000 residents. And they're not just residents. I believe we have 90,000 mayors in Miami Beach. And everyone has an opinion. But when you have that type of constituency, they're so active and they're so progressive and they're so pragmatic that we have a unique team. We have a huge team. It's Team Miami Beach on our side.
That was Philip Levine, the mayor of Miami Beach, and Philippe Brocard of Maison et Objet here in Paris. And our journey around this enormous design industry gathering continues as we visit one of the thousands of stands where companies show off their best. Like all trade fairs, here at Maison et Objet, you are either here to buy or sell. And some very busy people are here to do both. One such person is Sheridan Coakley, the founder and director of the SCP store in London. As well as being a retailer selecting some of the best design pieces from across the world, Sheridan has developed his own brand of products. Whether it's fabulously colourful cushions or a delectably simple toolbox, purity dominates at SCP. I went along to the stand to speak to Sheridan about the buy-sell balance and also met designer and founder of her own brand too, Donna Wilson.
I first met Donna about 7 or 8 years ago when we started to buy her products, and I asked her whether she'd be interested in designing some furniture for us, which is not what she normally does, and I thought it would be quite interesting for her to do something different from what she does for her own business, but with some kind of connection. And I think because we make upholstery, it was a kind of a nice progression that she did something to do with her knitted designs and her textiles with a piece of upholstery. And that's how we started working together.
Donna, is there a challenge in terms of keeping your own brand and the products that you create for SCP separate? Do you find there's crossover? And perhaps if we talk about the politics of cushions, so SCP obviously have their own cushions and you've got your own cushions. How does that all work?
Yeah, I think when I'm designing for SCP, I find it more challenging than when I am just designing for myself, because I obviously feel, I know that Sheridan will be wanting something different from my own sort of style, but also I want to keep it my style. So it's like a, like I've got two different personalities, split personalities.
Schizophrenic designer.
I think everything that I do has a sort of similar feel to it. So I'm quite interested in colour and pattern and composition. And those three kind of elements are quite symbolic of my style, but my own work is more kind of whimsical and graphic. And the work that I do for SCP is maybe a bit more grown up.
I wanted some of that as well. I mean, when we first started to work together, I think only work with male designers, not through, you know, any particular reason other than that's how it had gone. And having just taken over this upholstery factory, it was a kind of perfect way of bringing in some colour and some change and some softness to what we do, which is what we kind of needed and what the design business was going through. There was a logic, and the fact that Donna's a good designer, and it's a good designer can turn a hand to anything if necessary. You know, it doesn't just have to be because Donna is a textile designer that's all she was able to do. So she might find it challenging, but it was enabling her to do something different that didn't kind of threaten her own business and gave her an opportunity to work in other mediums. And it gave us this new kind of feel to our brand or to the range of products that we do.
And Sheridan, I want to focus a little bit on your own brand, SCP. You're a retailer, you have all sorts of other brands. What's the strategy there? Is there ever some kind of problems in terms of matching those two strands of what you do?
There's not much strategy. It's a pretty amateur little business that I've got going. And I'm never going to be able to compete with bigger brands. So what I try and do is do things that we want to do. We look for manufacturing techniques and manufacturers who are around that we can use that perhaps haven't been used for a while, like the terracotta range that we're now making in the UK. The furniture business or the products for the home don't really change. You know, people want chairs and tables and things to put things in. You know, it's not like the Jetsons. We're not suddenly one day going to reinvent the way that we live. So all we're doing is just using the materials and the facilities that we can get our hands on and interpreting the products, interpreting design in a modern way for people to live with.
Maybe talk us through some of the new things that you've designed for this collection that are being premiered, launched here in Paris.
Okay, well, we've got our feet resting lightly on this rug. We've got it made in India, in Bikaner, and it's made with a really kind of interesting weaving process, which actually looks like knit, and it's made with, so it looks like knitted wool. It's quite chunky, and it looks like a sort of really magnified sweater almost. It's called All Sorts, because of the colours and things. But we're also launching some patchwork quilts.
Yeah, they're really striking. They've got a very prominent position on this very tall wall that you've constructed. And, I mean, stretched out, that blanket is, what, 3 metres or 4 metres tall? It's kind of like the height of a house.
It looks like that, but it does just fit on a bed. But again, it's using, like, hand-blocked techniques, printing techniques, and lots of hand-stitching and things like that. So these two things are made in India, but generally we try and make as much as we can in Britain.
Sheridan, what are you sitting on?
I'm sitting on the tool stool designed by Alex Hellam, who's a London-based Norwegian designer, and it's a kind of multifunctional stool that is also has a little toolbox underneath, and so you can keep it in the kitchen, and it's got a ruler laser cut into the top of the stool as a stop so you can saw wood. So it's a kind of idealized instant toolbox.
I have to say that I was really attracted to that. It's the kind of thing that you realize that you wished you'd always had.
Yes.
It's sort of playful.
You probably did have one when you were a kid, actually.
Exactly. There's something quite childish about it in a good way.
Yeah. We're making this in Slovenia, and hopefully it will come out at a price which is kind of affordable. It's always difficult when you're making products like this not to think that actually it should be mass produced in the thousands, because it probably will be I think it's about £190, which is not bad for a stool and a toolbox.
That was the thoroughly charming Sheridan Coakley, joined by fabrics and soft furnishings designer Donna Wilson.
For over 6 decades, Grundig has made people's lives better and simpler. To this day, we bring our expert knowledge of design and technology to a wide range of high-quality domestic appliances. Whether refrigerator or radio, oven or audio system, we continue to integrate our manufacturing heritage with state-of-the-art technology. Grundig synthesizes the best of yesterday with the best of tomorrow, expertly and innovatively designed for you and your home. Grundig. Supreme engineering, timeless design.
Welcome back. You're listening to Monocle 24's weekly Design Hour Section D with me, David Pleasant. I'm in Paris at the Maison et Objet Trade Fair. There are around 3,000 exhibitors here in Paris, and that means somewhere in the region of 80,000 unique visitors. The choice is truly bewildering, like I said a little earlier. Luckily, the organisers have been clever enough to give out a few awards that might help us select what to see and where to see it. Increasingly high-profile designer Tom Dixon is winning a reputation for his bold, brash attitude to product design. Always one of those design evangelists, he has come across a few critics. Tom Dixon is nonetheless a visionary. This year, he also picked up the Maison et Objet Designer and Creator of the Year. At the Frame restaurant, in the shadow of a sparkling Eiffel Tower by night, I questioned Tom on how he always manages to stand out from the crowd.
Awards, kind of great. Given that we've only really been working in Maison et Objet for a couple of years, I think it's kind of nice to have a validation of what we've been up to. Maison's kind of a nice show, partly because you're in Paris. It's a reasonably curated show, and it's also a place where people seem to do actual business.
It's remarkable how the Tom Dixon brand kind of stands out amongst other design brands, and it seems to have happened fairly quickly. You've kind of really pinned yourselves down in a way that perhaps a lot of other brands find hard to do. Maybe you could explain what you've tried to do over the years.
I've tried lots of different ways of being a designer, you know, probably more than most. So I've been a poor craftsman making my own objects. I've then had my own metalwork factory pretty much in London, making things with maybe 17 employees. I've worked with the luxury Italian brands on a royalty basis, which was kind of interesting. I've been a designer in a big corporation, i.e. Habitat, which was part of IKEA at the time, so the biggest furniture business in the world. And when I'd done all of that, I kind of decided that it was time to try the last possible model that I could attempt, which was to create my own label. Now, weirdly, in the furniture business and interiors business, it seems like Most designers have studios and they service other manufacturing business or design distribution businesses. And I've kind of taken more a fashion business model in terms of what a designer might do, which is to create their own label, and then just really be involved mainly in the communication, the distribution and the design of the objects, rather than working for other infrastructures. So the reason, you know, to answer your question, the reason we seem to stick out in a context like, in a big show like Maison et Objet, is mainly because it's one person's view. Now, most of the other design houses, even the new ones, are using multiple designers, which is an odd way of using design, but it's also a peculiar way of branding. You know, it makes for very big confusion. There's the distribution brand, you know, so Moy or Muto or Norman of Copenhagen or Hay, and they use a stable of designers, which means that whatever happens, they've got the opinion of 10 or 15 or 20 designers all vying for attention on their stand, whereas on my stand there's only my point of view, you know. So from a perspective of clarity, I think that we've got a small advantage.
One section of your stand was devoted to a new project. Tell us about that.
The way it works is that as Design of the Year, you get a couple of thousand square foot of space that you can do what you like in. Normally what people tend to do is a retrospective of their work. But honestly, I'm much more interested in the next thing rather than what happened last few years. In fact, I don't really like the things that I made in the last few years, so I'm intent on making the next thing. So we had this idea very late in the game. First we wanted to do a restaurant, we couldn't do that. Then we wanted to do a shop, we couldn't do that. We finally managed to convince them that if we created something, we could sell it as well on site. So 3 months ago, I set about creating a perfume factory and decided that London brick was the basis of the diffusion of a room scent, if you like. So the idea was to make Paris smell of London or stink of London, you know, and use smell as a new kind of sector for us. So we set up a whole distillation plant, a packaging plants and a shop in Maison, and we've managed to sell to date about 300 bricks to the Parisians, which is no mean feat.
What, as a designer, what kind of excites you most right now?
Okay, obviously that's totally confidential.
But it's on radio.
Well, given that I've had a couple of glasses of champagne, I'm going to let you into it. No. We've done the difficult bit first. We've gone into furniture and lighting, which is quite complex from a logistics, legislation, certification perspective, and distribution and warehousing. So we've spent the last, I guess, 10 years building that. And so now with this accessories line and with a slightly more solid visibility, we can have new adventures. And what excites me is having new adventures. And those adventures for me are kind of in new materials and new typologies. So this year the adventure is about smells, you know, perfumes. Last year's adventure was creating a restaurant, having a restaurant in our so taste, you know. So having a restaurant in our studio and our infrastructure and learning a lot about that, designing quite a lot of restaurants. And so for me, the interesting thing as a designer is that it's not a thing in itself. It's something that you apply to a variety of trades. And I think that if you've got a reasonably strong point of view and an attitude which is tangible and clear, you can probably apply it to many different trades. So what interests me is going and putting design into places which I've never tried before. So that's what I'm seeing. I mean, from the perspective of what other people are doing or what I saw that was interesting, it wasn't a golden year, I don't think. This Maison Objet, which is in September, people tend to hold back till January to present their real newness. But I saw a lot of crystals, if that helps.
That was Tom Dixon, Maison et Objet Designer and Creator of the Year 2014. You're listening to Monocle 24 with me, David Pleasant, in Paris, at one of the world's largest design industry trade fairs, Maison et Objet. In just a minute, I'll be continuing my tour of the halls and meeting some of the bright young things at the Talent à la Carte stand. Plus, I'll be going to one Paris-based collective that are commissioning superb new products from Dutch and Turkish designers. So we've heard from some of the industry and creative big dogs when it comes to the world of product design. But at Monocle, we're always on the hunt for up-and-coming talent. Whether it's a one-off lamp made from green marble or it's a rug made from French silk, the Maison et Objet's new designers selection shows astonishingly high quality and a truly refreshing approach to design. That might have something to do with the largely fine arts background of those men and women on show. I spoke to art duo Anthony Stevenson and Coralie Ruiz that together make Ruiz Stevenson, and then to a very philosophical artist-cum-lamp designer from Israel, Joseph Maidan.
I work with an art gallery in Switzerland, and I work with a more design gallery in Paris. They represent me as an artist, but most of the gallery is design objects.
And we're standing right next to one of your objects, striking lamp. Maybe describe the materials, what the idea was behind this object.
If to describe it a little, it's just a piece of marble leaning on a fluorescent light. And the series of work started as only pieces of marble that was leaning on walls. It was like a collage of pieces of marble, which every piece represents something because the marble have its own geography. And this piece is from Ireland, but I chose it because when they did a new restaurant in the Palais de Tokyo Museum, they used this kind of marble all over. And I wanted to take something like a quote of something that called design, but inside an art institute or a museum. So this is already connecting design and art. So I took this piece from the same marbrerie, the same marble place. After that, when I started to work with the light, because actually it was also a quote of Dan Flavin that says that light is an extension of space. And this is why I started to take light and use it as space, because before all my stuff was leaning on space. It's because actually, if to go to the reasons of it, it's because I never studied art or design in school, but I took I did in the university mostly philosophy and history and psychology. And these pieces was talking about dependency on spaces, dependency of us in where we live. So now it's depend on the light, if light is an extension of space.
Maybe we can talk about the process of you being here at Maison and how that's been for you. What's the reaction been? Have people been interested in this object?
I think, and also this is the reason I made a collaboration with Marion Duclos, she's an interior designer, because I thought that my work might not really be people not be really interested in my work because it can't be edited. In my work, I take in like big pieces of marble and I break them, and I choose if there is another small pieces that I take, like, I don't know, a whole piece of marble, I break it and I choose only three pieces that I'm going to make lights with.
And you feel that's kind of too brave a move for some people to use as design to, you know, for buyers to come and you don't feel like you could step into that model of a designer, manufacturer.
Exactly. And like to be edited with my work. So as I see, like, it's the first day here, I saw people that were really interested by how it looks, and if it was like interior designer or art galleries, they were interested in my work. But in the same time, editors were not very interested. Like, they told me, it's interesting, but can you make more of it? And I said, no. First, I don't want. Second, I can't do exact copies. And for this, I did a collaboration to make some equality for something that I can offer for these people.
We talk about the relationship between contemporary art and design. Do you feel there's a kind of open door between the two fields? Do you feel that there is a dialogue increasingly?
Yeah, I think it's two different things. There, you said open door. I don't think there's an open door, but there's a dialogue. There's a dialogue of people, I think. Well, a lot of designers or like contemporary designers or contemporary artists, they're trying to look for the borders. But me, as I look, as I work kind of in the two genres, if you can call it like that, I don't see an open door. And this is another reason I think that in the structure of being an artist, you can't really go do design because it looks for other people like something maybe less noble. But in my work, I always wanted to do objects. They can't, I'm doing, in my work, I have shelves that I do. I have drawings on the shelves, and nobody uses them as shelves, but it's shelves. And after that, it's sculpture. But I think this is the only dialogue that people really do. Like, they do objects that you can't really use in the design world.
I'm Anthony Stevenson.
Coralie Ruiz.
And together you make?
Ruiz Stevenson.
We're standing in front of the prime object of your project, a rug. Where did it all start? What's the concept?
We were invited as artists to the salon, and at the moment we've been working around this idea of the digital world merging with the real world. So we've been developing these digital calligraphies, we call them, which are kind of explosions of text, kind of typographical kind of things. And we realized that little faces were appearing out of nowhere, kind of true faces of the machine.
So we've got what the machine was saying. You've printed it out, various symbols. So the whole alphabet and different symbols there in a kind of strange order. And you've taken from that what is a smiley face.
Yeah, that we call abstract expression. They appeared from like the digital chaos. And at the same time, we wrote an article who were edited in America called Neuroscience. And there was like some research about the fact that today we react the same when we see a smiley coming in our telephone space that when someone smiles to you.
So the machine is smiling at us and we react the same to it.
Yeah, the chemical part of your brain reacts in exactly the same way. If your lover smiles or if your phone sends you a smiley.
So we've got this really wonderful, high-quality rug that you have the smiley in the middle with the kind of faded colours around. And around it are some other symbols that you've developed from the machine's kind of message to you.
Yeah.
And it's true that there's something really... It does make you want to smile back at this face. It's kind of mysterious.
We were kind of moved by them. Like, we were like, oh, amazing, look at this one, he's smiling. Oh, this one looks like a little sad guy, this one. So we were decided to collect them and to take care of them, kind of.
It's become less like alphabet and more like hieroglyphics, you know? It's like a new kind of hieroglyph.
And finally, how has it been received? Have people been wanting to buy this rug? What kinds of questions are you getting? Who's coming to you?
People are walking past and some like really literally stop and like, oh, you made my day. It's really amazing. Like, it's really kind of fascinating. It's like a little bracket, perhaps. In the salon, we are kind of the UFO, I guess.
I think you're right. I think the whole talent a la carte stand is really like a UFO in here because it's these very kind of like well thought out products that come from a more artistic background. So it's very different to the kind of manufacturer side that you see around you everywhere else because they're more established design houses, you know, and we're here with our new things for people to see that take them to another place, which is really nice.
Those were the voices of Anthony Stevenson and Coralie Ruiz, plus Joseph Maidan. And I should say just how bold and exciting their products were. If you have a spare 4,000 euros, I would urge you to order one of Ruiz Stevenson's fabulous silk, made in France, smiley face rugs. You're listening to Section D with me, David Pleasant, coming to you from the Maison et Objet Design Fair. Next, we're going to pay a visit to the starkly simple charcoal grey stand of TH Manufacture. I spoke to banker-turned-design house founder Jean-Baptiste and some of the designers he has selected to create for his brand.
The display actually was made by Sacha Leong, who is an old friend of mine when I was living in Hong Kong. He is now an architect in London, and he was the architect for the Ace Hotel in London. And he just helped us displaying things in a very elegant and simple way. We work on material, so porcelain, wood, and glass. And he managed, using fabric glass, felt, and black velcro mat, to display everything with a very subtle elegance.
A very toned down, dark or charcoaly grey kind of dominates, just to allow the pieces to really shine out, is that right?
Exactly. We wanted to take the opposite approach as what you usually do when you have a very white and shiny environment. Here everything is about showing the object and standing out of the decor. And these colours in tones of grey are very elegant, and yet they allow the object to display all its energy. And it's important to show the energy of the object because we work on crafts, and what we believe is that an object has the energy that was transmitted by the person who handmade it. The first thing that people do when they come here, they first touch the felt because they find it amazing, and then they touch the objects, which is exactly what we want them to do. It's a path for them to fall in love with an object.
Wow, a very passionate language about objects. Well, we are at Maison et Objet, so let's get passionate about objects. And also, we should describe, there are a series of booths, so there's four booths, and you're right about being able to touch this material. You want to kind of lean in and kind of have a relationship or discussion with the object. But if we could just talk about the background of the object and where they come from, because that's an important part of what you are trying to do with your collective. What are the stories behind each of the objects that you've decided?
So this is my second career. Before, I was working in finance, and I lived in different countries, in Italy, in Hong Kong, in London for 6 years, in New York. And every time I would come back home, I would come back with objects that I could only find in those places. And I realized that when I would bring these objects and tell the story of the objects to people around me, they would suddenly connect to it. So I went back to school to learn to be a ceramicist, because I wanted to be confronted to the clay and understanding what it meant to create something. And then I wanted to create a new design brand who would then find objects and tell the story of the people behind the objects, and explain that if you're a Dutch designer coming from Eindhoven, you carry with you a culture that is different from a designer who lives in Venice, who carries another culture, and his ideas in design and in production making will be different. If you take one of these porcelain objects, for example, this one from Jeanne Bonnefoy, Jeanne actually followed her husband, who is a searcher, to Yemen. She was working on renovation of ceramics of the Qumran, and she learned pottery in Palestine. And this is a craft art that is only made by men, so she was only allowed to stay 2 hours a day there. And she came back to France. She decided to take the antique shapes of Qumran for the vessels who carry water, and she decided to change the handles. And she said, oh, if I change the handles, the position of the handles on this vessel, that is an antique vessel, what would the outcome be? And we came out with these wonderfully elegant vessels to put flowers. Also, we decided not to put any glaze on it. So when you touch them, you actually feel the clay. It's matte finish, and it's just absolutely wonderful.
My name is Maarten Baptist. I'm a product designer. I graduated from the Design Academy in Eindhoven in 2002 with a cutlery. And now like TH manufacturers from France, they invited me to make like an object for them. And he wanted me to make it locally and to combine two materials, because he saw it in another object of me that I was combining like multiple materials in a nice way. So I made like a glass object made by a glassmaker from Eindhoven, but got his education with Philips. Philips made like a lot of glass objects in the past.
So there's that electrical tradition, and you really wanted to show that. You wanted to kind of have some link to Eindhoven, to Holland. Was that very much important?
I really love the making of things, so that it's like people are like having a craft, and it can be really technical or can be really like crafts. And I really would want to make that crafts in a way that it's like really 2014 or 2015, that is really from now. So no, I don't want to go back too much in time to get inspired what happened then. I really want to shape it for the time now.
And what's the result? Can we try and describe visually what you've kind of got here in front of us? What are these objects?
It is like a glass object. It's like a bottle with a handle. So it's like a tube from almost like 4 centimeters wide, which you can hold. On top is like a round ball with like one flat part with optical glass, so it's really flat and really straight. When we make it, it's like translucent glass, and at the inside we put like a silver coating to make it from a glass object to a silver object, what works like a mirror.
And the result is this, as you describe, a spherical, a ball with one flat, flattened side and a handle that works really nicely. It's something you really want to pick up. But it has a kind of, I don't know, it sort of feels like a laboratory, or especially when it's before it's got the silver coating, it kind of looks like a kind of scientific piece of equipment.
And it is, but I also love it that like the glass part's looking a little bit up, so it's like some little creature was really a little bit looking up into the sky.
Like a face. And you can put your own face in the face.
Exactly.
Just to kind of go back to, if we can call it Dutchness, or trying to really
integrate those methods and manufacturing techniques in your work? Is that something that you want to keep doing, or is this just a one-off project? Can you see yourself kind of basing your design philosophy in locality and in place, or is it just a kind of something that you're doing for this project?
When I make my prototypes, my models, Eindhoven is a really good place because there's like a lot of industry still hidden there to make things. But I really want to collaborate with like many Dutch designers. They make in their own workshops small quantities, small production runs, what are way too expensive. And I really believe that you should collaborate with industry to when you get an order of 5,000 pieces that you can scale up to touch it. And I think a lot of Dutch design, they still keep it in their own little workshop and they never can expand quite nicely. But the Dutchness in my signature, like a designer in my objects, I think it's quite clear when you see like all my objects after 12 years of designing, it's getting a really nice family of like totally different objects, like my cutlery or my tripod wine glasses or my water decanters or my Lucky Love chair. It's all objects. When you, I think you see them together, you see that it's like all totally different, but you see a signature in it. And there's Dutchness in it. It's like a playfulness. It's like quite cheerful, but there's like some serious touch of giving shape to our objects. It's, and not so much putting decoration to make it till object.
My name is Umut. I'm from Istanbul, Turkey.
We're looking at your products that you've designed. Maybe explain what they are. We're looking at ourselves in those products. What are they?
Yeah, this is the mirror I made it the last year. Again, in the salon, the Maison Objet. I won some award and they invite us in the Maison Objet, Talents à la carte. And after I met with TH manufacturer in here and they would like to produce for me this product. And after I am here.
So, I mean, it was really because of Maison that you met TH manufacturer, and this kind of process happened thanks to the fair, the development of your ideas, your prototypes to a product, really happened thanks to Maison, would you say?
Yeah, Maison, yeah, we have to say to the Maison and Safi, you know, because of the, it's important for me, because it's different than in EU country or American countries, for example.
Turkey, you mean?
Turkey is a little bit hard. You have to work really hard. Maybe two times more than EU designers.
Why is that, do you think?
Because of the, you know, not easy is upcoming designer. It's okay, it's now maybe Turkish design is a little bit going to up, but it's hard, you know, take a visa and after explain yourself.
It's difficult for designers to travel, experience that kind of conversation with the community. Is that the problem, or the market within Turkey as well? People are not quite ready for you.
Yeah, it's coming now, started, for example, magazine also, the interview with us. Now, a few people we are in Istanbul, as a designer, they are, you know, working hard, like a war, a little bit. Because also the big designers coming to Turkey, like Karim Rashid, they're making the design. For some Turkish big designer, also Defne Koç, and the company wants to work with them more.
Just to kind of focus in on these products that we have in front of us, you've designed these mirrors that are kind of multi-purpose, so that they're magnetic mirrors.
Yeah, magnetic mirrors. This is the reflect my the style a little bit in this mirror, because I use the, I explained the physics, mathematics, so simple, you know, everyone knows, for example, the magnets. It's so simple, but for me it's a little bit magical, but we forget it is the magical sometimes, you know. For example, I use the geometry also. I would like to change the form with my other design, but in this I would like to use the magnets. So simple, because
so we have the keys are actually, we've got a set of keys,
yeah,
and they are attached. Show me how. So I, you've got to have a piece of paper. Oh
yeah,
there's a
yeah.
business card and a set of keys, and they're suspended in the middle of the mirror.
Yeah, this is the generally for the woman, exactly. I think first, okay, his name is attractive. This is the, like a woman, you know, it's all women.
Because the woman can look at herself in the mirror.
Yeah, sometimes they forget that they pay pins, you know, for hair, they put here. And let's say if you use it, for example, next to the door, a fork key is good. Because before the leaving the home, you look yourself and you don't forget your key. Or some stuff, you know, if you can use in the bedroom or the bathroom also. You can change the, you know, the design.
The mirror for the modern Turkish woman before she leaves home, and she wants to put her keys somewhere. She can look in your mirror.
No, the Turkish woman actually doesn't.
Not the okay.
It's more international.
Okay.
For you than we are.
Okay.
Here.
That was the founder plus two selected designers of TH Manufacture, who are based here in Paris. You're listening to Section D with me, David Pleasant, where we'll be back straight after this short break.
Grundig's goal is to bring the best of the world's entertainment into your home. Its digital and DAB Plus radios allow you to access an unlimited choice of broadcasters from around the world and to listen to them with the most superior sound quality. Its new Bluetooth-enabled audio products let you play music from your smartphone. Grundig is committed to making sound crystal clear, whether it's beaming in from the other side of the world or from a mobile right next to you. Grundig. Supreme engineering, timeless design.
Welcome back to Section D with me, David Pleasant. Now we're coming towards the end of this special broadcast that has come to you from Monocle's very own cafe and shop here in Hall 8 of the Maison et Objet Design Fair here in Paris. To end, let's meet another set of designers. The partnership that is Emiliano Salci and Britt Moran together form De Moray Studio. It is the Milanese design practice that everybody is talking about here at the fair. This September, they have designed the cafe and restaurant of France's most read interiors magazine, Elle Décoration. De Moray's style is full of contrasts. Quintessentially Italian trattoria-type chairs clash with neon sculptures suspended above. I spoke to this design duo and found out the new tricks that they have up their sleeves.
The name of our design firm is De Moray Studio. We're in Milan, Italy. And we are working on several projects at the moment between hotels, restaurants, private residences in Europe, North America and South America.
Here at the Maison et Objet in Paris, you've had presence in the form of a cafe for Elle Décoration. Maybe as an introduction, let's talk about that design and what that process was.
We were asked by Elle Déco to do a restaurant for the fair, and it was a fantastic project because we wanted to create something that was a bit unusual. It's a bit more like a cafeteria space, but a bit more underground, radical chic space.
Radical chic, the color, the violet.
Very stark. I noticed that the light is very bright, you know, there's no place to hide.
Well, I think the idea of the Maison Objet, this edition, is sharing. So we wanted to make sure that the space was a very kind of, you were almost forced to sit with everyone in the space at one time. All of the tables are arranged so that everyone is eating nearly with everyone else. And so I think that was a nice way to approach the concept.
What I really liked about it were the chairs, because they remind me of an Italy from 20 or 30 years ago, a 1970s Italian trattoria.
This traditional chair in the Veneto, in Italy, and the picture red, and the cushion in fabric prugna.
Which is a Bordeaux. So that's your cafeteria or restaurant. Maybe let's talk about some other projects that you're doing. What's really exciting for you guys at the moment?
It's been a very busy year. We've opened up a restaurant in Milan called Ceresio Sette. It's the name of it. It's a fantastic space. It's on the rooftop of a building in Milan. It's, I think, 1,000 square meters, has two swimming pools. We're opening on Tuesday here in Paris a new boutique for a candle company called Cire Trudon. So that's going to be next week. We've also been working on a hotel here in Paris and also in Guadalajara in Mexico.
Much the residents are very important for the collectors in the London, in the UC, and the Switzerland.
What kind of things are inspiring you at the moment? What's in your sketchbook? What's in your notepad?
And the trip and the art, contemporary and old, and the fashion and the street and the people. I love color.
I can see you love color. You've got the most fantastic pink shock shirt, maybe you could call it.
Thank you.
Perhaps just to end, events like Maison et Objet, do you find them important? Do you feel you have to be here, or is it something that you find a bit tiresome?
I mean, I think it's really nice to be here because it allows you also the chance to maybe hear some comments from journalists like yourself about what you see and It's always very flattering if people tell you they like what you do, and so I think it's nice for that. And it also gives you the chance to meet people, so I don't think it's tiresome. It's a nice way to maybe meet other designers as well.
That was Emiliano Salci and Britt Moran, who together from Demore Studio in Milan. And that's about all we have time for on Section D, a Maison et Objet special. Tune in next week as the show goes back to London, where I'll be handing over the reins to Monocle's design editor, Tom Morris. This show was edited by Holly Fisher and Alex Funnell. You can contact me, David Pleasant, at dmp@monocle.com if you want to feature on the show or have any comments or queries. To play you out, we have the Friendly Fires with the rather appropriately named Paris. Thank you for listening. One day we're gonna live in Paris.